On today's playbook, Coach P sits down with Brad Lingle, a 23-year mortgage veteran, Elevate coach, and top producer. Brad began his career in law, but a mistake cut that path short and set him on a new one. Sometimes the thing that feels like the end is just the beginning. Brad went all in and eventually went on to hit staggering numbers: 565 units, $228 million, but it left him burned out and broken. That wake-up call showed him there was a better way. Today, Brad still wins big, but with systems that give him back his time. He's proof that mistakes can shape you and that real success is built with intention.
Elevate your business, starting now.
All right, I want to welcome you all to the Elevate podcast. We're sitting down here with Brad Lingle. He is a 23-year mortgage veteran. He's a branch manager, Elevate coach in Folsom, California. What's going to make this conversation a little different today is, you know, we talk about elevating our business and we always talk about numbers, right? But today we're going to talk about Brad's journey, and he's going to get vulnerable with us a little bit. He's going to talk to us about mindset shifts and his transformation and his journey from changing the way he does his business. So Brad, welcome.
Thank you, Paula. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you. My first question is, let's just start here. You know, you got into the business 23 years ago. How did you get into the business?
Fell into it. So as I've spoken about before, I'm really not supposed to be here. I actually came into the Sacramento area to practice law. So my wife and I, we met and fell in love and got married right out of law school, moved up from the Bay Area to the Sacramento region. And my notion was that I was going to be this big, bad attorney. And it turns out that the bad was actually accurate. I was not a very good attorney. The way my mindset was to be the best associate, which was to bill as many hours as you could. And I forgot about learning the practice of law. So after the first year of being at a law firm that I was quite unhappy with and really got torn up by the partners, and it was not a good situation, I went to another law firm. Ultimately, I made a $38 million mistake and I was fired. And so I didn't know what I was really going to do. And so I read a book called What Color Is Your Parachute? Got kind of back into a sales mindset. I had sold payroll services for ADP prior to law school and realized I really need to be in a sales environment. So my dad said, hey, well, you know, I know there's some mortgage brokers. They do pretty well. So after my mom begged me to stay in the practice of law and I said, no, I'm done. I met up with a gentleman who's now recently retired, introduced me to his company, Comstock Mortgage. And that was April of 2003. And I'm very fortunate and entirely grateful that what you're perceived as your worst day in your entire life. And for me, it really was, turned out to be the most fortunate thing, certainly professionally, that's ever happened to me. I'm so grateful for being fired and being pushed out of an industry I was failing at, because I did not have the courage to quit. I don't quit very easily. Falling into mortgages, I found out that I did really well. I have the mindset, I have the grit, I have the sales skills to excel. And 23 years later, it's the best thing ever happened to me.
Right. We all kind of fall in different ways, but you know, challenges like that, mistakes. Now, so you think about a $38 million mistake you made, right? You were new. How many mistakes we make in mortgages? Now I'm feeling good about my concessions today.
So coming from a world where everything was detail oriented, and then I turned in a file and I didn't have the right stacking order, it was turned back to me. I thought I was going to get fired again. And it turns out that while I may not be the most detail oriented attorney, I'm quite detail oriented in the mortgage industry. So it's played out well for the mistakes.
It served you well.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
So what was your first year like in mortgage? Okay. So I want to go back there. What was it like for you? And what would you go back and tell, you know, the version of yourself now, right? If you were to go back and do this again?
You know, that's a good question. And I don't know that I would do it really that much differently. My first year, I was broke. I was on 100% commission. My wife made 50 grand a year. I had $250,000 in student loans and a car loan and a mortgage and a kid on the way. So I didn't really have any other options. I do come from an upbringing where my father's the hardest working guy I ever met. So that was the role model that I had. He's a CPA and he got up every day and he went in and he busted his ass and I didn't see him for 4 months out of the year because he was during tax season. So hard work and showing up was never anything that was foreign to me. I started off with my database was everyone who lived in California and was invited to my wedding. That was my initial database. My very first loan was my dad. I'm pretty sure we didn't even need to refinance. I think that he just did it just to help me.
Help you out.
Right. And I opened up the, back in the day, they would have a listing of all of the newly licensed real estate agents. This is before really computers, right? So you'd get a newspaper and they would list them all. And I would cold call every single one of them to see if I could get a meeting. Actually, funny story is the one person that actually met with me, I still work with today.
That's and awesome.
So it was just anyone and everyone. One of my best agents I still work with today. In fact, we're about ready to get into contract today. Is a guy that I overheard talking to somebody at a like a mailboxes, etc. And he said he was going up to talk to someone about real estate, and I talked to him. So I would talk to anyone and everyone at that time in that first year. I checked my ego out the door. I was willing to meet with and do any loan possible. I put an ad in the Penny Saver. So it was, I didn't know what to do. So I did everything. A couple of people in the brokerage, they would give me a few deals here. And this is 2003. So we're starting to go into that first little refinance boom. But I was from the very start, just will not let go. I will not quit. And I love the thrill of the chase. I love the sale. Once the sale's done and they're in contract, I want to obviously close it, but my heart and my passion is in that sale. So the sales environment really worked well for my personality and kind of my internal constitution. But perhaps there was, if I had to tell myself, I would tell myself that I would have slowed my pace down just a little bit because I came out of the gates at a flat out sprint. And, you know, within 3 or 4 years, I was, I've told you this story. I was on the floor crying in my master bedroom with my wife. I had no assistance. I was doing everything from addressing thank you note addresses to chasing down docs to putting together closing gifts and then going to scheduling in the signing, right? And then going to the signings and doing all that. I did everything. I think there was like a June, whatever year, maybe 2005, 2006. I worked 19 days in a row of 13 hours straight. And I was done. I hated everybody. I hated mortgages. I hated realtors. I just didn't want to do anything. And my wife at that time pleaded with me to get an assistant to help out. That was the first step, paradigm shift in my business to get some help.
What year was that? Like, how many years were you in?
Probably two or three years in. I've never complained a lot. Those early years, it was tough. It's always tough. It's a sales environment. I've gotten better on how to handle that over time. But that first year or two was head down and go as fast and as hard and eat as much as I possibly could.
What I think is interesting, because you're a manager, I'm a manager. We work with loan officers. And clearly we don't have that's not normal, because typically the top people are drivers. I would call you absolutely a driver. For me, when I got in the industry, I had been recruiting college basketball players for 12 years and having to make calls. And the result was, if I didn't make those calls, right, and we didn't have a good team, we're going to lose, right? So I was very motivated to make those calls, even when they were tough. Where do you think you got that? Like, how did you get that drive to just, you didn't care, you're on the phone, I'm going to call, cold call, I'm going to do all these things. Where did that come from for you?
I don't know really what the answer is. I mean, I will acknowledge that my parents have been married for like 55 years. They're both college educated. They have master's degrees. I grew up in a middle-class family. I was never for want of anything. So I'm not like that person who says I was down in the dumps and I didn't want to be there and I had to recreate and change myself. I have been afforded every opportunity imaginable. I recognize that, and I never wanted to screw it up. So where does the drive come from? I think part of it is one of the reasons why I failed as an attorney is that early on in my career, Paula, I really wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the number one producer at Guild, because I have learned now it was very ego driven. I regularly put emphasis on how I felt and viewed myself based on the perception that I wanted other people to have of me, wearing a suit, being the best. If you weren't in number one, two, or in the top 10, you were a loser, you were unworthy. And so my ego, and I come from a family that has some egos, really drove me to get to the top, because I thought that the number one thing was to see my name in lights and all the glory. And that was really, really important to me for the majority of my career. It's not anymore. I hated to lose. I compared myself to everybody else.
So true. When you compare yourselves to everybody else, you kind of lose the joy in life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is, because it took me a long, long, long time, right? We're talking 25, 23 years to recognize that not everyone's playing the same game. What game are you playing? What game am I playing? What is my definition of success, right? They purport to say it in other coaching programs. You push, you push, you push, you make as much money as you can. And then, you know, you want to be part of your family. Well, most of my coaches were divorced, and I don't want to be divorced. And so what are you really doing it for? Are you really in alignment? Like you say, you're doing it for your family, right? So you can have a better life, but you treat your clients better than your family. That doesn't take.
It's what's the trade-off, right?
Right. Everything. And I've told people within my own branch, and I tell a lot of people, you know, what do you do that's different? I say, the way I'm behaving and working now is totally different than when I was young. So go back to your very first question about what would I do differently or tell myself in that first year. I would say, be honest that if you want to shoot for the stars, if you want to make a lot of money, if you want to close a lot of loans, you will make a sacrifice. And you don't need to think about what the sacrifice is. I'm going to tell you what your sacrifice is. It will be time with your family. That is the sacrifice. And are you willing to make that sacrifice to get whatever it is you're searching for in mortgages? I will tell you, I am 100% okay with the sacrifice that I made, and I would do it all over again. It's allowed me to live a life that is way beyond what I ever thought. But I think that when you're young and you're broke and you're starting a business, you act differently than the way you and I would, Paula, right? We're in a different stage. But I would go back and I would do the same thing. I'm really getting into golf now, right? Okay. And I joined a country club and I'm so ecstatic about it. My mindset is just like I was when I was a young loan officer. I'm like over the board. How much do I want to practice? I got two golf clubs behind me. Like I can't stop. So early on in anything, you got to work your ass off and you have to sacrifice.
The story you told me a while ago about your dad coming into the garage, yeah, and you were practicing golf.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of you, the word that always is the number one word when I think of Brad is discipline, right? Yeah. How disciplined you are, like you did when you made your calls and the things that you did. And now with golf, right? And your dad came in and said, Brad, I wish I could play golf like you. I wish I could be as good as you. And what did you say to him?
I said, Dad, you're retired. What's holding you back? And he says, well, this and that. He just makes excuses. And I said, then you just don't want it bad enough.
I know. I think about that. I think about you telling your dad that he just, you know, if you want it bad enough, you'll practice, right? Just like what I'm doing right now, Which is what makes the difference, right? Even in any skill that we have, whether it's in sales, whether it's in golf, whether it's in parenting, right? We got to work on those skills. Let's go to the time that, you know, the year that you closed 565 units for $228 million, which was incredible. A lot of people were closing tons of loans, but you said to me that it left you broken at the end of that. What was going on behind the scenes? Like during that time that you were closing that many loans, what was really happening in your life?
Well, I was sacrificing everything. I mean, that's really what it was. It was in the middle of COVID, and I had like three times as many people in my branch and working for me now. I know that my phone literally ran off the hook for, I mean, the first time it was like a May or a June, I want to say 2020. And my assistant and I, on Friday afternoon, we started laughing. I said, "Dude, we just locked 14 loans," and we were giggling like, "This is crazy." I sent out one text earlier that month to like 170 people just as a flyer, and everyone called me. And then for the next 2 years, I did not lock less than 14 loans for 2 years straight. I worked, I don't know, 8 a.m. till probably 7 o'clock at night. My wife would come in and say, "You know, you need to come and eat dinner." And then on Saturday, I would wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I worked till 11 or 12, just banging out one estimate after another, moving things along. And again, I made more money than I ever thought humanly possible. It was beyond what I thought. I got addicted to the money, and I got addicted to the number. How long can you go, right? It's, again, my ego was getting in there. And it was one of the most unhappy years of my life. I just worked way more than I should have or needed to. I don't know. I mean, I look back, to be honest with you. Would I do it again to get to the spot where I am now in my life? Yeah, I would. I mean, that's just part of my personality. If I see it, an opportunity, a life-changing, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to set myself and my family up for a lifestyle, and I can get out of the business early, would I sacrifice? Yes, I guess I'm willing to sacrifice. But I was broken. I do remember putting my head down on a table at the dinner table with my three daughters and my wife on a Tuesday, just a random Tuesday, and they're just talking about school, and it's just life. It's like, it is literally the life. That's life. And I couldn't engage. I was completely spent. And I remember that moment and I started questioning whether it was worth it, whether the sacrifice that I made was worth it, because at the end of the year, I got all the accolades. I got all the attaboys. I made a ton of money. January 1st comes, it's back to zero. I'm completely spent. And on top of that, Paula, I wasn't even close to the top. Like, so there are other people that were running laps around me. And so I thought, what in the hell is this right? And that was when I decided I will definitely take the loans and I will for sure take and make the money again, but I'm going to do it a different way. There has to be a better way. And that was probably the next paradigm shift in how I think about, how do I run my business? Where do I want to get my referrals from? And how am I willing to live my life going forward?
I was very similar to you, Brad, that year. And my mindset was, when will I ever get this opportunity again, right? And I better take advantage of it. But it really, I mean, it takes the whole life out of you, right? And also like the guilt that you feel from not being able to be around your family and give back to them. So I 100% get it. So you took that time, you reevaluated, you decided I got to do things different. You were completely burnt out. So what did you do? What were the steps that you took to make some changes in the way you do your business today?
I think probably three things. One would be I needed to build a team and delegate better, more. But the team is essential that can do stuff. And then, by the way, when you do get a team and you hire someone and you get them on here and you give them responsibility, you have to let them do the work. You have to be a good manager. You have to lead them and set up a construct from which they can be successful, but you have to let them do the work. And when you keep on jumping in, it's disrespectful, right? Who wants to, like, no one wants that. So build a great team. Do not settle for staff. You do it yourself until you find someone that can do it the right way. I really took on technology, and obviously at Guild, we have insane technology to make me more efficient so I can do more in less time now. Then I would probably say I'm willing to walk away from a deal and, more importantly, relationships with people who I don't feel respect me, don't treat me the way I treat them, and clearly don't want to be in a business relationship with me. I'm willing to walk away.
I mean, I think empowerment, what you just talked about, is huge. I think it's hard for a lot of people when they start to build a team because we have this control factor, right? But that empowerment gives people confidence, right? And then they continue to grow and do more, which just helps us be able to, I think it allows us the time to do the things that we really like. So when you were talking about technology, because, you know, I love the technology. We've been teaching that in Elevate. We've been trying to get higher adoption. You've been a coach. You've led in that area. And change is not easy, right? It's difficult to make some changes. That's what we've kind of discovered through this process of trying to get people to adopt. What is one of the systems that you use with technology that's really helped you, whether it's given you back time, helped you get more leads? I mean, what do you like to use as far as the technology? What do you leverage?
Well, I do everything in Salesforce. And so, you know, for people who are not using Salesforce, you 100% should get a database management or CRM of whatever it is, or use the companies, but 100% use Salesforce and a deep dive into the tools afforded there. And then the other stack on top of that would be outreach. Hey, have you read that book? It's the notion is like, if you just want to double your business, great, but why not go 10 times your business? And if you were going to think about going 10 times your business, what are the new ideas you would have to do to blow it up, right? It gets you way past. It really helps you think outside the box. The outreach is Xing my business. Before we got on this podcast, I sent out 32 texts to pre-approval clients. They're all customized to the client. I put the message in there and it's click, 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 click. And I'll go back in and I'll log the calls. So in 45 minutes, an hour, I can have a massive amount of prospecting output and follow-ups to people. I'm in a format, right, via text now. That's the way everyone wants to talk. That's way more efficient. It allows me to track the data in Salesforce so I know, do I have a lead problem, a conversion problem, or, you know, a process problem, so I can see my conversion numbers. I was called a catastrophicationist, which is, oh my God, I lost a loan. I'm going to have a bad month. I'm not going to make any money. I'm going to have to fire all my assistants. It's going to be so embarrassing and humiliating. Everyone at Guild is going to know I totally fell on my face. My wife's going to think I'm a loser. And you deep dive like head first into that black hole. The only way I know how to get out of that is to stay really busy and to run a business by numbers. So while I may not have the most robust May right now, I know my lead count is way up. And statistically, I'm going to close 24.7% of the leads that I get. That's my conversion ratio. So, okay. So if the person who said they were going to go somewhere else yesterday, I say, see ya. I know you're going to wish you worked with me in about 3 weeks and I'm going to move on to someone else. And it's business by the numbers. So I know where to focus and be precise with my time.
So people that may be listening and, you know, what is outreach? Outreach is a system for follow-up, right? And it allows you to follow up with a lot of people. I think, you know, when I've recruited people before, I've talked to them about their TBDs, you know, just their pre-approvals. And I was talking to one gentleman, he's like, oh my gosh, Paul, I finally went through them and I lost 7 people. And I'm like, how did that happen? Like, why did you, I didn't follow up, right? And I think in our industry too, we so want to get the next deal, get the next deal, get the next deal, right? The next lead. And, but what are we doing with the leads we have, right? How are we keeping those people that we've already worked so hard to get, right, in the hopper and get them all the way to the end? So outreach is an incredible tool to keep that follow-up going. I love, and you and I have talked about this too, you know, you were always calling people and you finally, you said, you know what? They're not going to pick up the phone. So I'm going to use texting, right? To send the same messages.
I'm still reaching out. I'm about ready to get into contracts today. I looked it up. I started working with this guy in like March of 2021. Kid you not. The agent said, stop calling him. He's not going to buy. I'm like, this guy is going to buy. It's just a matter of time. He's a great borrower. And I followed up with him the whole time. This may get me in a little bit of trouble, but I'm going to say it anyways. I don't think, and I think this applies to loan officers, and I think it for sure applies to real estate agents. I think that we are mischaracterizing and labeling what our jobs are. We are not loan officers. I don't think of myself as a loan officer. And I tell real estate agents, do not think of yourself as a real estate agent. You are a salesperson. That is what you do. You are either selling loans or you are selling houses or you're selling pens or Stanley cups. A salesperson sells. And it's not that hard. It's whoever makes the most phone calls or texts or whatever and pushes the most stuff out and has the best process and takes care of people and learns how to be a master salesperson is going to close the most business. That's it. But in our mindset, we don't think of ourselves as salespeople. And I think it's really hamstringing us on how you go about the process. It's very easy for me to do what I do because I'm selling. I just happen to be selling loans, and I think that if we changed our mindset, it would certainly allow us
right.
to do
like
things differently.
We talked the last couple of years about prospecting, right? Because we're salespeople. And that has to come first before anything else. People get too comfortable. I'm a loan officer because that means I'm just going to work on my files, right? I'm in my files all the time instead of understanding your number one job is to prospect and sell.
Well, here's a question I asked the students that I'm coaching. I asked people in my own branch, would you hire yourself as a loan officer? Would you? And if not, why? And are you okay with that? Like, seriously, look at yourself in the mirror. Do you have what it takes to be a top salesperson? Are you willing to read books and listen and learn and give up on things that don't work and pursue things that do? Would you hire? I'm not talking about a staff person. I'm saying if you ran your own branch and you're looking for a rock star, someone who's going to get pay you profit on your branch, would you hire yourself? And I think that will answer a lot of questions about people and their passion and whether they have what it takes to really, you know, if they say they want to move the needle, are you willing to make the sacrifices to do it?
Right. I think that's 100%. It's the sacrifices we make and it's learning. And it's, we always have to continue to learn, which is what I love about Elevate.
Yeah.
You've also said to me many times, discipline leads to freedom. Talk to me about how discipline is just in your daily life. What's it like in Brad's daily life? How does he leverage discipline?
You know, a lot of people ask me this question, and I feel like I need to acknowledge a little bit that discipline is not difficult for me. If my brain's just wired a certain way, I can walk past a piece of cake, I can walk past beer, whatever the vice is. And if I just decided that I'm not going to do something or I am going to do something, I just do it. So I found that in order to have the energy and the business and the life that I wanted, I needed to really get into control as much as I could. So I believe firmly in the miracle morning. I've read Hal Elrod's book and I've been practicing the miracle morning. So I wake up every morning at 5 a.m. Yes, I go to bed around 9:30 to 9:45. There's nothing else going on. And I would challenge you, Paula, if you're not going to bed, you know, when you're a kid and your parents say, Paula, it's time to go to bed. And you say, but mom and dad, it's only 9 o'clock. And then when you're older, right? It's 9 o'clock, right? And like grandma and grandpa are going to bed. You want to know why? Because 9 o'clock is bedtime. That's what time humans are supposed to go to bed. You go to bed a little bit earlier. You're not going to miss your favorite show. You get a good night's sleep. I do all the stuff. There's no electronics in my room. It's like I read my book for about 10 minutes and I fall asleep. I wake up at 5. I go through the miracle morning. I read, I meditate. I write down some daily affirmations in a gratitude journal. I read 10 minutes of a self-improvement book about whether it's finances, or I just finished this great book called The Ego is the Enemy. Totally transformative in the way you think about how special you really are. I really like that book. And then I'll go to the gym and I work out. I go to a CrossFit gym. I have a class from 6 to 7. Recently, I've gotten into cold plunging, and there's a cold plunge at the gym. So now I go in there and I sit in that damn cold water. It's 43 degrees for 5 minutes.
How long do you do it?
Five minutes. Yeah. And people are like, that's a little long. Part of it is that I enjoy the mental struggle of staying in something and being uncomfortable and seeing if I can stay in there longer than my body wants to get out. So there are breathing techniques, but that's just how my mind works. I get up, I have virtually the same breakfast every morning, and then I'm in the office and I go through, it's the calendar is set, it's the same thing, the routine and the discipline makes me feel comfortable. It's like a good pair of jeans. Now, why do I say it gives you freedom? Because I want to be out of here at 4:30 to go hit some balls. The only way I can do that is I have to get all of my work done today. And I won't go unless I get the work done. So I have to show up and I have to be on it. I can't have distractions. I need to get to my work because I want to go do something else. I do not want to work ever again at 7 o'clock on mortgages. I did that.
It's 1:41 our time. So are you going to be able to go hit balls today?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Absolutely.
You planned
I got
this,
a couple
right?
hours left when this is done. I'm going to bang it out. And how I know it's working is that my online reviews, the feedback I get from clients and from referral partners is exceptional. So it's a system. It's a process. I would challenge anyone to show me a really, really successful, profitable business that is running chaos and has no processes and no systems. Inventory building, coming in, a process, get it out the door and move it along. People are creatures of comfort, right, Paula? So people come to me because it's the same thing. They know what to expect. That's why people go to, they go to Starbucks. They go to fast food restaurants because they know they're going to get the same burger or fries cooked the same way wherever they go. That's why they go to those places. So why not turn our businesses into something like that? People will be attracted to it.
So when you were like, if we go back and you were doing all those loans and you were working all those late hours, were you doing any of these disciplines before? Were you doing that then as well? I mean, were you getting up at 5 and reading Miracle Morning, or from the chain, you know, part of that journey was making these shifts and changes to some of these disciplines?
I think it probably happened all at the same time. I've always gone to the gym. I believe in taking care of your body and your mind, and it reflects on how you are viewed in the world and how you take care of yourself. So I've always been disciplined. I've always gone and, you know, eaten healthy and all that kind of stuff. I started because my gym didn't have a, like they canceled the 6 or 6:30 a.m. class and it got pushed back to 5:30 or something. There was a scheduling and I was really pissed off because I didn't want to wake up that early. And so for a while I was waking up and I was quite resentful about having to get up that early and I have to go through all this stuff. And how come I can't sit and lay in bed and keep on sleeping? It was a long time. And then what I realized as I incorporated the Miracle Morning in is that once I get up, that's my time. It's quiet. I do not turn my phone on. It's on do not disturb. It is my time to have some peace, to set my intentions for the day, to, if I have a tough conversation coming up, I have a moment to breathe and think through how do I want to handle it. And, you know, in our line of work, I'm giving so much of myself to everybody else throughout the course of the day. It's just healthier for me to have a little bit of time. So I started to realize that it's not a resentful thing. It is my time. This is when I'm choosing to give it my time. And for everyone who always says, well, that's so early, that excuse falls deaf on my ears. And the reason why is, well, Paula, you just were in the Caribbean and that's what, 3 hours ahead of time. And you were there for 5 days. Did you adjust to the 3 hours time change after a day or so?
Yes.
So don't say that you can't go to bed a little bit earlier and wake up a little earlier. It's just an adjustment. Again, how bad do you want it?
I'm the same way. I get up at 5 too. I love it. Get your day. I mean, you just start out and you've got your routine and you just
successful people don't sleep in. While everyone else is dreaming about what they want to do, I'm getting up and I'm doing it.
Exactly. You're putting it in action. What is your definition of success? So you talked about your ego. You talked about success being numbers and money and all these things. Today, what is success? How do you define that, Brad?
I'm going to give you two definitions of success. One is short term, and then one would be long term. I'll do the long term first. Success for me would be an early retirement where I am financially free and I no longer need to rely on the mortgage business to pay for my lifestyle. I do not need to have a large branch. I do not need to see my name in lights. I haven't looked at the rankings of where I am at Guild in probably 9 years. I mean, I just don't even look anymore because it's not important to me. The short term or the day-to-day success would be, can I live the life and allow and do the things that I want to do to enjoy, which is playing golf on Fridays, going on a hike with my wife on Saturdays, traveling. I like to travel a lot. Can I do that and have my business run seamlessly and keep my income level the same or higher in an environment where I can detach a little bit and have some time to myself? So 13-hour days are no longer of interest to me anymore. I don't really need to do it. I'm still doing a lot of loans and in the spot that I want to do, but I just do it differently now. I have an insanely talented team that takes care of a lot of stuff, but I brought them on. I made a lot of bad hires to find them. They're fantastic. I think I take really good care of them. No one's quit on me, and I take a lot of pride in that. I have a good team that's been around for a while. I've trained them. I manage them. I coach them constantly so that they can take stuff. I'm leaving for Africa for 3 weeks, and we're going to hike, just so everyone knows, my wife and I, for our 50th birthday, we're hiking Mount Kilimanjaro.
Wow.
So I leave in about 60 days, and I am not nervous about my business or my branch or where it's going to be. It's set up, and I can go and I can enjoy my life. And that's success.
That is definitely success, yeah. Right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a healthy way of defining success, right?
Yeah.
To have balance. Because I think, you know, the buzzword about having balance in your life, I think when you begin any type of business, it's really difficult to have balance.
Yeah.
I think as your business, the evolution of your business, and as you move forward, to me, that's the pinnacle. Like, if you can train and get people to master what you've mastered to help you, right? So that you can go do the things that you love and still work. I mean, 100%, that's success. That's incredible.
Yeah, it took me a long time for me to be okay with playing golf on a Friday. It's foreign to me. Again, I come from a family where my dad, that never happened when he was working. And so I had my own mindset and perception of what a hardworking person does, and it's not playing golf. And it took a long time for me to recognize, well, wait a minute here, maybe a really successful person is someone who can go and play golf and network with people he wants, and the business is running. Isn't that really a sign of success? So I didn't do it when I was younger, but now, well, I've earned it, and I'm out there, I'm talking with people, and, you know, and I'm playing with financial advisors and clients and realtors, and that's the sign of a successful person. Now, if you don't have any business and your systems are shot and everyone's calling and pissing and moaning because you can't close on time, I don't think that you get a chance to go play golf on Friday, right? You have to set it all up first. You can't do what I'm doing 23 years in without starting where I started in year 1, 2, 3, all the way up to like year 22, right? I didn't play golf much last year, but I am now.
Yeah. I think the big thing I've talked about a lot is, what's the difference between a $9 or $10 million producer and a $50 million producer and above? And it's systems. It's taking the time to build those systems, to work on those systems. And I see, you know, I think I see so many people in the beginning of their career that want your life now, right? And that's what really holds people back, is not working on those things right from the beginning, right? So if you could do those things in the beginning and you don't skirt away from them and you get out of chaos, you're going to get, we'd all get there a lot faster.
Yeah. Right? It's compound interest, Paula. Compound interest works for everything. When you start off and you're new in anything, you're not going to be very good. You got to cut your teeth and you got to work. And the compound interest is now just paying off. Your questions were great about what did I do 23 years ago? I asked somebody in the company that I first started with. He was the top producer. And I asked him, what did you do? And he wouldn't meet with me. I asked him out to lunch, and he just declined to eat me. He was more than happy to ask me legal questions, but he never shared with me. And I made a decision at that point that as I got older and I was going to be successful, that I would answer and help out anybody else. Because one is, I wanted to be open. I do believe that there's enough loans for everybody. We can't eat that much, right? It's a large whale that we all are trying to eat off of. But number two, I can tell you what to do. Everyone knows they're supposed to make more phone calls, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't get it done. So the challenge would be, you know, as people get information, I would say two things. One is, do it. Just do it. Don't make excuses.
Just like Nike. Just do it.
Right. And number two is, filter out the stuff that doesn't work. So I don't do a lot of social media prospecting and marketing anymore. It doesn't work for me. I tried it for years, spent a lot of money, just doesn't work. I do it in different ways. So if you're doing something that's not working, be honest. I mean, it's an ROI. How much are you spending time and money? And how many can you actually say leads have come in from that marketing source. If you don't have the ROI, that's pretty darn good. Get rid of it. Go do something else. And don't be upset.
Hey, listen, I want to thank you for coming today and sharing your wisdom and your knowledge. If you're listening right now, ask yourself, you know, are you building a business that serves you, right? Or are you running a race that you really don't want to run? And if you know anybody out there that is burnt out, because this has been a long haul. I mean, we went from 3 years of just massive production to we're in our third year of a challenging cycle that we're in. And some people are burnt out for different reasons. Listen to this call. Brad had some great advice for everybody, you know, about building a team, empowering your team, creating systems, having discipline. And if you aren't used to getting up early, try it, right? You never know what could happen. But anyway, Brad, thank you so much for being on our call.
It's always a pleasure, Paula. You're the best.
Well, you are too, buddy.
Thanks for listening to Elevate Your Business, a podcast from Elevate, the internal coaching program at Go Mortgage. Glad you could be here for today's playbook. If you want to check us out, head over to gilmortgage.com and click About Us to find Elevate Coaching. Have a question or want to keep the play going? Visit us and send a DM on Instagram at Elevate Mortgage Coaching, or leave a comment for us on YouTube. We're posting extra content, behind-the-scenes action, and everything you need to stay in the mortgage game. On Elevate Your Business, we share real stories and strategies from top producers to help you move forward. So ask yourself, what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate.
Guild Mortgage Company, NMLS identification number 3274, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, equal housing opportunity, equal opportunity employer, Arizona banking license number 0018883, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Massachusetts Mortgage Lender and Broker License Number MC3274. Licensed by the Mississippi Department of Banking and Consumer Finance. Licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Nevada Mortgage Company Number 1141. Oregon Mortgage Lending Number ML176. Rhode Island Licensed Lender and Third-Party Loan Servicer. Guild Mortgage Company, 5887 Copley Drive, San Diego, California, 92111. For licensing, visit guildmortgage.com/licensing. All loans subject to underwriter approval. Terms and conditions apply. Subject to change without notice. Elevate is an internal Guild Mortgage Company coaching program and not a separate entity. Podcast content is provided for informational purposes and based on publicly available materials or tactics used in the industry. The views, strategies, or opinions discussed do not necessarily represent those of Guild Mortgage Company or its affiliates. Intended for mortgage industry professionals only.
Paula Nurschel, NMLS number 383396. Brad Lengle, NMLS number 249309. Thank you for joining us on Elevate Your Business, a podcast for mortgage professionals brought to you by Elevate, the internal coaching program at Guild Mortgage.